Okay, let me give you two pieces of information before we talk about the passage from the book of Ecclesiastes. The first thing is I am going to be gone next Sunday, so Brandon Reynolds will be preaching in my absence. Brandon kind of grew up within this church, and so we love to bring him back. And he is kind of in the middle of his Master of Divinity at Abilene Christian, and so come and be encouraged by him. He's going to preach on Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, so one of our VBS stories. And so I know you're going to look forward to hearing Brandon and see the growth that has happened in his life. Second thing is we were able, because of this congregation's generosity and people connected to our congregation, able to give adventure Bibles to every kid in VBS from kindergarten up. And that is a big, big deal. One of the stories that was told Friday at the meeting was there was a little child who went to their teacher and said, "This is the first Bible I've ever had." And my guess is that was probably not the only kid who had a Bible for the first time. And if you've never seen one of the Adventure Bibles, they are a great Bible. We've got a couple back in the office if you ever want to flip through it. And they're perfect for kids and for an introduction to our Father and to Jesus. And hopefully we'll go to do some very great things. And so for all of those who were part of that, in whatever form or fashion, thank you so much. What a privilege to be able to do that. And then for all who were involved, I'm sure the elders are grateful and you'll hear more from them, but I am so thankful to watch our church in action. It is a beautiful sight, and let's keep up the good work. We got other things coming on the horizon that are going to call all of us to jump on board. And so let's try to pursue those things with the same vigor that we pursue VBS. Okay, let me tell you how I came to the sermon that we're going to study this morning. I'm sitting in my chair in my office, and I've got my feet propped up, and I've got my cup of coffee, and I've got a Bible in my lap, and this was probably 3.5 weeks ago, and about 9 o'clock or so, Taryn comes in when it's VBS time, and so I hear Taryn's voice, and usually when Taryn comes in, then not too long, there is Lindsay and Melissa. They come in, and they all congregate in the office right next to mine, and they start talking about VBS, and they're talking about what needs to be done and what's done, and we got this and this and this, and then they get off the subject, and they've gone from the VBS coordinator to the people who work in the office to three friends, and I start reading the book of Ecclesiastes. And about the time, and I don't know if this is a God thing or if this is just coincidence, but I start reading the book of Ecclesiastes when they start talking about VBS, and about the time I get to chapter 4, they're talking about all kinds of other stuff that friends do. And I thought, that's what I want to preach the Sunday after VBS, because relationships matter. Now, Ecclesiastes, for the most part, is a depressing, kind of cynical book. Most people who read Ecclesiastes think, why on earth is this even in the Bible? And I think one of the great reasons it's in the Bible is because it is a little bit cynical. And because there is a call to see life more than just what's under the sun. But in the middle of this book, well, not quite the middle, is this great little section on relationships. And I think it is Solomon's way of saying, for all of my life, I have looked out for number one. For all of my life, I have been self-absorbed. And in the middle of being self-absorbed, I have surrounded myself with women, and I have surrounded myself with riches, and I have surrounded myself with yes men, and I have surrounded myself with everything. But I think he gets to this point of the book, and he says, in the midst of all of that, I'm lonely, and I'm by myself. Because Solomon is going to say, I've tried everything. But he would say, in this great little scripture, life with a friend is so much better. And I just think of that line, life with a friend, because those things matter. You've heard me ask many times, who would you call at 2 o'clock in the morning? Because we all know very few good things happen at 2 o'clock in the morning. And who would be the first one you would call? Well, my guess is the first one you would call, you would instantly equate them as that would be a friend. That would be someone you're in relationship with. That would be someone who you know would be there. And for a lot of us, our closest friend might be our spouse, or it might even be a sibling. But for many of us, our friendships are intertwined within the life of this church. And those things matter. So let's just hear a little bit from Solomon, this great paragraph. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they'll keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. And a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Okay, let's talk about our culture for a second. Right now, our culture kind of values the rugged individualist. The one who says, I've got this figured out, and I'm doing everything on my terms, and it's going to be my way that I've designed this life pattern. And we admire that. And they get talked about on the news, and they get promoted, and they get this, and they get that. Sometimes we even talk about the rugged individualist in church. I'm not a fan of this phrase, but I've heard this phrase even in our rooms before that goes like this: you never know how much God is all you need until God is all you have. You heard that phrase before? Let me give it to you again. You never know how much God is all you need until God is all you have. What's bad is if that phrase is offered, then we have missed something. Now, I understand the phrase. I understand that we're going through some trials and some tribulations and some difficulties and some hardships. And so we look up and say, okay, we've got God and that's great. And I'm not denying that at all. But I really hope you never come to the point that God is all you have. Because if that's the case, we've missed out on a huge part of what it means to be community. See, one of the great kind of words within the church right now that is floating all around in almost all the literature is the idea of being relational-based and being community-based, and not community in the sense of I live in the community of Roswell, but community-based in the sense that you are my family and we are community and we are together, and there is this call that says we need each other. And I want to stress that this morning. Because a lot of you've got each other already, and a lot of you are in some great relationships, and you got somebody you can call at 2 o'clock in the morning when things go south, but we need to see that relationships matter and that there's always the call to keep building those things. When God does this whole creation scene in Genesis chapter 1 and then kind of retells it in chapter 2, he gets to the story of chapter 2 and he says, it's not good for Adam to be alone. And so he creates Eve. See, it's not good for us to be this rugged individualist. I used to always joke, and I don't do it anymore, but I used to always joke that I would be, you know, most of you know I'm kind of an introvert, and the preacher in me makes the extrovert kind of come out a little bit, but for the most part, I'm an introvert, and my favorite place in this church building is not at this little perch. My favorite place is in my office by myself with a book. And I've kind of joked on occasion that if I could just walk in, read, study, write sermons and classes and walk out, I'd be perfectly fine. And that's not really true, because I've learned that relationships matter. And this idea that ties us and that binds us and that brings us together and that makes one not near as strong as two and three is stronger than that, and you can kind of build on that image over and over and over, is that relationships matter. And the friendships we have within this room and the bonds that we have as brothers and sisters in Christ are hugely important. Denny talked about Jesus being before Pilate with no friends, and that had to be haunting. But I go 3 years earlier in the story of Jesus, and he's got all kinds of friends. You know, he's going to go from masses that would call him a friend to a narrower group of 12 and a few women that will follow. And then he's going to go down to three. And then you get to the Gospel of John, and he's going to say, here's the beloved disciple whom we assume is John, the son of Zebedee. And even Jesus, who was Son of God, had to have people around him, had to have friends, and had to have those that would hold him up, and had to have those that would help him do his job, because relationships matter. And when it comes to anything meaningful, two is always better than one. Okay, that is proof all last week. When one person is trying to decorate a room, it is a task that takes forever. But yet you bring somebody else in and now two are decorating the room, suddenly there's a little laughter and there's a little singing and there's making fun of the preacher and there's a few jokes in there, and before you know it, the room is up and everything is gone. Because relationships matter. So why is two better than one? Solomon gives a few reasons. The first thing Solomon says is two is better than one because a friend shows up when you fall down. I read this line from a book a few days ago. This life is full of people ready to bury you when it looks like you've blown it. I mean, that sounds kind of accurate of our world. There's a whole bunch of people just lining up waiting for you to fail. And as soon as you fail, they're going to pound you as hard as they can. And I think what Solomon is saying is a friend is there to catch you when you fall. But what I find interesting is a friend is there not only to catch you when you fall, but more than that, a friend is there to keep you from falling in the first place. Okay, I've got a couple ministry friends that I value as much as outside of my relationship with Nikki and the relationship with the elders, that maybe I value as much as any relationships going on in my life. And one of the things that I know I can do with that group of ministry friends is I can say, here's where I'm struggling. And they can say, well, we're going to help. And I can also go in the midst of saying, here's where I'm struggling, and they're determined to not let me fall because they're my friends. Because we're in that relationship and we matter to one each other and there's accountability. And I can say to one of them, are you working on this? And they can say to me, are you working on this? And we can say to each other, are we treating? And we can fill in all of those blanks. And if we were just trying to be the rugged individualist leading this church, we wouldn't have that. But those things matter. You got Proverbs 27 where Solomon writes this, wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. You ever had a friend call you on the carpet? You ever have a friend look you in the eye and say, buddy, I see where this is going? My guess is if you've had some struggles in your life, you have had someone who's been willing to stand up in the midst of that and say, we can't go this way. Because relationships matter. Okay, I'm reminded of a story that happens in Galatians chapter 6. And we kind of referred to it a couple of weeks ago, but let's just read the beginning of it. Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. And then notice what he says. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. That for Paul, he's looking back saying, okay, here is who we are, and if one sees a brother falling into a pit, they're going to do their very best to not let them fall into the pit. And if they do fall into the pit, they're going to restore them gently, and they're gently going to bring them out of the pit with love. And we can probably fill in all the blanks that go with that, with love and with encouragement and with helping hands. But it's going to be burden-bearing. I was walking around during VBS with something that one of our young people thought was too heavy. It wasn't heavy at all. They just think I'm old. And so I'm walking around with this big thing that's really light, and I'm just going to throw him under the bus. Desmond Mendoza comes up and he says, Mr. Austin, let me get that for you. That's too heavy. He thought that was a burden. It wasn't a burden, but I was more than happy to give it to Desmond and say, see you later, bud. Take it to my class. Do we do that for each other? Do we carry each other's burdens? When we know somebody has got a difficult path, it's not about talking about them, and it's not about gossiping about them, and it's not about masking gossip in prayer. It's about standing next to them and saying, can I help you with your burden? Can I help you get out of the pit? Can I help you with whatever it is going on in your life? Because those things matter. Okay, there's an interesting relationship that happens in the book of Acts. And the relationship is between Paul and Barnabas. And when Paul first becomes a Christian, we talked about this a little bit in the Ananias sermon a few weeks ago. When Paul first becomes a Christian, the first one to come to his aid slash defense slash encouragement is a guy named Barnabas. And those two will then go out for at least a few years and have this beautiful partnership of taking the gospel all over the Roman Empire. Now, they've got a young guy that goes with them named John Mark. And for whatever reason, John Mark leaves, and it irritates the hound out of Paul. In fact, it irritates Paul so much that when they get ready to do another journey, Barnabas says, hey, John Mark's ready to go again. And Paul says, he ain't coming with us. I doubt Paul said he ain't. He had too good a grammar. He's not coming with us. And Barnabas says, oh, yes, he is. And we get a little split between Paul and Barnabas. And one goes one way and one goes the other way. And what God does is he takes little breaking of that small friendship, and he uses it for his glory. But 20 years later, Paul is in prison and about to die, and he says, "Send John Mark." And I find that amazing, that even though that friendship had been severed between not only Paul and Barnabas, but probably between Paul and John Mark, there comes a point in time where things must be aligned back. And I think it's all because of Barnabas. Because Barnabas sees Mark, and maybe Mark did run away, and maybe Mark got scared, or maybe Mark thought family was more important, or maybe Mark fill in whatever blank, but Barnabas was willing to reach out to John Mark and say, "Come on, young man, let's go again." And 20 years later, Paul has done the same thing. Because those relationships matter. My guess is there's a pretty good percentage of you who are still in your marriage or still trying to parent or still in your jobs or still coming to church because someone else loved you enough to say, "Come on, let me help you." So not only does a friend show up when you fall down, but the second thing is a friend helps you out when you face life. Notice verse 11. I find that to be an interesting line. "If two lie down together, will they keep warm? But how can one keep warm alone?" And that's a dog and a cat. That is not my dog, because there would never be a cat with my dog. What a metaphor. When two lie down together, they can keep warm. Okay, I'm sure that metaphor makes you think of a few other things, but I think what Solomon is trying to say is sometimes life is cold. Do you agree? Sometimes life is hard. Sometimes you go to work, and it's hard. Sometimes you go out into your neighborhood, and it's hard. Sometimes you get even within your own family, and it's hard. And what Solomon is saying is it's a lot easier to handle when you've got a friend. Here's what he would say in Proverbs 18. He would say, "One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." My guess is some of you have that. And I hope you are that to others. Paul would say this in Philippians chapter 2, and he's about to talk about Jesus. And maybe the perfect song to sing would be, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." But he would say, "Not looking to your own interests, but to the interests of others." That I think Solomon in Ecclesiastes is going to go over and over and say, I've run this world all about through myself and through my self-absorption, and I've done everything that I wanted to do and found out none of those were the answers. But the answer was looking out for someone else. Then one of my favorite stories. I want to read the beginning and the end of it from 1 Kings 19. It's the story of Elijah. So here's what happens. Context, Mount Carmel has happened. So Mount Carmel, one of my, 10 favorite sermons to preach. Elijah whoops all the prophets of Baal and Asherah. Israel wins this great victory. God wins this great victory. And then we get this chapter. "Now Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. So Jezebel, the meanest woman in creation," "sent a messenger to Elijah to say, 'May the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like one of them.'" Okay, let's pause a moment. Do you get what she's saying? By tomorrow morning, you're dead. And if anybody can carry it out, it's Jezebel. Verse 3, "Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there while he himself went another day's journey into the wilderness. And he came to a broom bush and sat down under it and prayed that he might die. And here's what he prays: 'I have had enough, Lord. Take my life, for I'm no better than my ancestors.' And then he lay down under the bush and fell asleep." Let's pause again for a second. I think Elijah is throwing a little bit of a holy temper tantrum. And he's where a lot of preachers have been. I would say even me included. "God, I have done everything that you have asked me to do. I've done and I've done and I've done and I've done. And here's what's going on now." Maybe you've been there too. "And I just assume go somewhere else." Then he lay down under the bush and fell asleep. And notice what God does. At once, an angel touched him and said, "Get up and eat." Okay, the story's going to go on. There's going to be some food and a couple things that go on in the midst of that. And then we get to the end. Elijah's still a little upset. I've been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant. They've torn down your altars. They put your prophets to death with the sword. And I am the only one now left, and now they're trying to kill me. And the Lord said, go back the way you came and go. Now notice what he says. Go to the desert of Damascus. When you get there, anoint Hazael, king over Aram. Also anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, king over Israel, and anoint Elisha. And then he's going to keep on going to succeed you as prophet. We get to the next slide. Jehu will put to death any who escape the sword of Hazael, and Elisha will put to death any who escape the sword of Jehu. And I've reserved, notice what he says, 7,000 who have not bowed their knee. Okay, I think the message to Elijah is totally different than the message from Elijah to God. Because the message from Elijah to God is, God, I am in this by myself, and there's no one to call at 2 o'clock in the morning, and all of the guys who were on my side, the bad guys have killed, and it's me, and it's me, and it's me, and I'm by myself. And God says, oh, no, you're not. Go here and anoint a king, and go here and anoint a king, and go here and anoint a prophet, and go here and look. Friend helps you. The next few stories you see in the book of 1 Kings are Elijah and Elisha. And there's this bond between these two. In fact, it's a bond so great that Elisha mourns the loss of Elijah. And it's a friendship that starts because God says, you are not alone. But the third thing is a friend joins when you got to fight back. Ecclesiastes 4:12, back to our text, said, though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Okay, let me illustrate it this way. Tom Schaefer is out there, so I'm going to talk about him. So you all can tell your dad and your husband. I talked about him in church. About 3 or 4 months ago, we had a lady who was really, really mad at me. She was really, really mad at me because I would not give her $300 in cash because I was afraid of what she was going to do with that $300. So I had offered her groceries, and I had offered her counseling, and I had offered her prayer, and she said, I don't want any of those things. I want $300. And she started to get mad and madder and madder and started to yell. And then most of you know Tom Schaefer. Tom came and stood next to me, crossed his arms, and just quietly stood next to me. And she said, thank you, minister, I'll talk to you later. Now, we weren't in battle in any shape or form, but she would have yelled at me for 24 hours, and I needed a friend. And I needed someone in the middle of something difficult to stand next to me and say, I've got your back. I need the same thing in life. I don't need it just on a Sunday morning when someone's accosting me for money. I need it all of the time. Proverbs 17 reads like this. In right in the middle of it, he says, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for times of adversity. Just think about that. A brother is born for times when it's the hardest. Okay, what I've noticed is when hard times come and someone has got relationships around them, they're able to handle those hard times. And it doesn't make the hard times go away, and it doesn't make the hard times easy. But it makes them manageable. And I've also noticed there are moments when people don't have those relationships that even a gentle wind sometimes seems to almost knock them over because they're missing out. They don't have that bond with somebody to help them. So I'm annoyed. I am annoyed because of a phrase that I hear a bunch. I hear this phrase a bunch that says, all I need is a personal relationship with Jesus. Okay, hear me for a second. I am all for every one of you having a personal relationship with Jesus. Okay, don't hear me say something different than that. But I am for so much more than that. Because when I read this little book that we talk about all the time, there are so many one another passages that it's so much more than my relationship with Jesus. And that's important, and we ought to work on that, and that needs to be stressed. But it's so much more than that. So here's what James would say. He would say, therefore, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. For the prayer of a righteous man is powerful and effective. Each other. See, that matters. It matters when I can call a friend. John chapter 15, Jesus would agree. Here's what he writes. My command is that you love each other as I've loved you. For greater love has no one than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. Okay, we've talked about finding those relationships. And I think we've probably talked about being the other side of the coin of those relationships. I hope as you walk this journey, you never do it alone. I can't tell you how many times I've heard, both within the church at times and certainly outside of the church, is I know hundreds of people and I'm lonely. And I know hundreds of people and not one of them would I call if my house burned down. And I know hundreds of people, but I sit alone all of the time. My heart breaks for those people because they're missing out on what I think is one of the core tenets of the Christian faith. Because it's not just about loving God, and it's not just about having this relationship with Jesus. It's having this whole one another community thing. That's why we sing songs like Bind Us Together. That's why we take those moments at the beginning of class and we pray over each other. And that's why we have those moments when we fellowship in a small room or in a big room and we sit across tables. And that's why we have moments when we team up to mow yards, or we team up to run a VBS, or we team up to do something else in the world. Because those relationships matter. And we are on this journey together. So after that morning, when I was reading Ecclesiastes, I started thinking about my friends. Most of them are in this room. And I started thinking about not only how I depend on them, but can they depend on me? Because one another matters, and one another is important. So I hope you will either do one of two things, either cherish all the one another's that you got, or maybe two, make the move to be the better one another to each other. Because we need it. The world's not going to get any better, I'm afraid. And so we need each other in the midst of it. So I hope you'll find that. We find first the most important relationship with God. We enter that into with the understanding of what God has done to forgive us and to save us and to heal our souls. And if you're ready to be baptized, what a perfect time to do that. But if you're ready just to find someone you can depend on, here's a place to do it. And here's a group of people who can be that kind of people for you. So if you need us, let us know as we stand and as we sing. Kent.